Bay. George Williams College of Aurora University, changing lives through education. Online at aurora.edu/GWC.
WGTD Radio Theater and the 91.1 Players are proud to present Orson Welles' Mercury Theater on the Air in Bram Stoker's best-known novel, Dracula. Support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of O'Connor, Dumay, Aaliyah, and McTernan, the Westosha Veterinary Hospital in Salem, and the Agape Chiropractic Center in Lake Villa, Illinois. And now, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Arthur Seward. I am here tonight to bear witness to the truth of certain events which you may find hard to believe, but I ask you to believe them. I have here certain documents, telegrams, clippings from the press of the day, memoranda and letters in various hands. All needless matters have been eliminated. Through the history almost at variance with the possibilities of contemporary belief, they stand forth as simple fact. I present you first with excerpts from the private journal of Jonathan Harker.
I, Jonathan Harker, lawyer's clerk, articles to Peter Hawkins, Esquire, of Exeter, England, am writing this journal in the hope that if misfortune overtakes me, and maybe one day come to the eyes of those who love me. I set out from London on the last day of April to visit one of our clients in Eastern Europe. On May the 3rd, I arrived in Budapest and came after nightfall to Klausenburg on the border of Transylvania. At Bistritz, there was a letter of welcome for me from our client informing me that his carriage would await for me at the Bargo Pass. It was signed Dracula.
Bukovina! Coach for Bukovina!
The road was rough, but we still seemed to fly over it with feverish haste. When it grew dark, there seemed to be some excitement among the passengers. They kept speaking to the driver and looking at me and urging her on with greater speed. The crazy coach rocked from its great leather springs. The mountains seemed nearer to us on either side. Driver, where is it? Where are we?
You are nearing your destination, young hare. This is the Borgo Pass.
There are black rolling clouds overhead, and in the air, the heavy, oppressive sense of thunder. Now we go through the pass.
The young hare is not expected after all?
You are early tonight, my friend.
A caleche with four horses had drawn up beside us.
Let me help you, sir.
The coachman smiled, and the lamplight fell on a hard-looking mouth, with berry red lips and sharp-looking teeth, as white as ivory. We began to move. I looked back. The coach with its load of passengers had vanished from sight. We swept into the darkness of the pass. I struck a match. It was within a few minutes of midnight. Then a dog began to howl somewhere far down the road. The wind was rising, moaning and whistling through the rocks, and the branches of the trees crashed together as we swept along. It grew colder and colder still, and fine powdery snow began to fall. The bang of wolves sounded nearer and nearer, as if they were closing round from us on every side. We kept on ascending, always ascending. The howling of wolves was growing less. Presently, it ceased altogether. And just then the moon broke through the black clouds, and by its light, I saw around us a ring of wolves running alongside the carriage in silence, with white teeth and lolling red tongues, with long, sinewy limbs and shaggy hair.
Welcome to my house.
I must have fallen asleep. The carriage had pulled up in the courtyard of the vast ruined castle. The coachman was nowhere to be seen.
Welcome to my house. Come freely, go safely, and leave something of the happiness you bring.
Count Dracula.
I am Dracula.
The face was strong, very strong, aquiline. The mouth, so far as I could see it under the heavy moustache, was fixed and rather cruel-looking, with particularly sharp white teeth.
You hear them, Mr. Hawker.
The wolves?
The chief do not deny it. As you say, Mr. Hawker, the wolves. Listen. Come now. There are many things you must tell me tomorrow. Of England, and of the estate there you have purchased for me.
Yes.
The estate is called Carfax, I believe.
Yes, that is so.
But now I will detain you no longer. You will find your room in readiness, and I advise you not to leave it during the night.
This castle is on the very edge of a terrible precipice. A stone falling from the window would fall 1,000 feet without touching anything. I explored. There are doors everywhere, all of them locked. The door to the great hall, the door to the courtyard, even door in the castle is closed, bolted against me. Castle Dracula is a prison, and I am a prisoner. The next night I could not sleep, so after a few hours I got up and, lighting my candle, I placed my shaving mirror on the dressing table and was just beginning to shave.
You feel rested, Mr. Hawker.
I had not seen him, although the reflection of the glass covered the whole room behind me. I turned to the glass again. Count Dracula was close to me, and I could see him over my shoulder, but there was no reflection of him in the mirror. It was blank. I startled and cut myself on the side of the throat. The blood was trickling down my neck. My mirror!
The blood! Wipe the blood from your face, Mr. Harker, and take care how you cut yourself. It is more dangerous than you think in this country.
When I awoke, I found most of my things were gone. My passport, my notes, my letter of credit. I could not find no trace of them anywhere. And my door was locked from the outside. June 20th. There is work of some kind going on in the castle. Now and then I hear the faraway muffled sound of mattock and spade. And last night, the second of 3 dated letters which Dracula made me write. The second of that series, which was to blot out the very traces of my existence from the earth, went forth. Count Dracula.
Yes, my young friend.
Well, what of me? When am I free? When can I leave this place?
Free? Mr. Harker, you are always free. You want to leave? Would you like to leave tonight?
Yes. Yes, in God's name.
My dear young friend, not an hour shall you wait in my house against your will. Come, follow me. Your door seems to be bolted. How strange. Your door is locked.
In God's name, open it, please.
As you will, Mr. Harker. You English have a proverb that is very close to my heart. Welcome the coming, speed departing guest. Good night, Mr. Harker!
Shut the door!
The door is shut, Mr. Harker. I take it. You will remain?
Morning, June the 30th. These may be the last words I ever write in this diary. God preserve my sanity. I have never seen Count Dracula by day. At sunrise, at the first cock crow, he is gone. I don't understand these things. I only know that the wolves are baying and that he is a man with hair on the palms of his hands, with sharp teeth and no blood in his face. He casts no shadow. He cannot be seen in the glass. And he moves like a bat across the sheer face of the castle walls. He eats no food, and is mortally afraid of the crucifix. As I write this, I hear in the courtyard the rolling of heavy wheels and cracking of whips. And there is in the passageway, below, a pound of heavy boxes being set down, boxes shaped like coffins. And I know what they hold. The boxes are filled with holy earth from the chapel beneath the castle. The last box being nailed down. And now I hear the heavy feet trampling again. doors shut and the chains rattle. In the courtyard and down the rocky way, the roll of heavy wheels, the cracks of whips. Help. 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 The wagons have gone. I'm alone in the castle. I'm alone in the castle. I'm alone in the castle. I'm alone in... I'm alone.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Seward. Mr. Harker's journal terminates at this point. I now present into evidence a clipping dated August of that year from the Yorkshire Telegraph from my correspondence in Whitby. One of the greatest and most sudden of storms on record was experienced here today. The weather has been somewhat sultry, but Saturday evening was fine. The band was playing. The piers were crowded with holidaymakers. The winds went away entirely in the evening, and there was a dead calm. There were but few lights at sea. The only sail noticeable was a foreign schooner under full canvas that was seemingly going westward. A little after midnight came a strange sound from over the sea, and high overhead the air began to carry a strange, faint, hollow booming. Then, without warning, the tempest broke. And there, with all sails set, was the foreign schooner rushing with terrific speed toward the shore. A searchlight was turned on her, and there, lashed to the helm, was a corpse with drooping head which swayed horribly to and fro at each motion of the ship. A moment later, she crashed. Then an even more strange thing was seen. At the very instant she touched, a huge dog sprang up on deck from below, and running forward, jumped from the bow onto the sand, and making straight up the east cliff toward the graveyard, vanished into the night. The coast guard, going abroad at dawn, found the dead man fastened to a spoke of the wheel. Tightly clutched in one hand was a crucifix. The man must have been dead for quite 2 days. In the pocket of the dead man's coat was found a bottle, carefully corked, containing a roll of paper. This proved to be an addendum to the ship's log. There was found on board only a small amount of cargo, and that of a most unusual nature. Apparently, the ship carried nothing but earth. Common earth, packed away in wooden boxes, shaped much like coffins. Telegram, Seward, per fleet to Van Helsing, Amsterdam. Lucy Westerna in alarming condition. Cannot diagnose. Come at once, Seward.
Telegram, Van Helsing, Amsterdam to Seward, per fleet. I'm on my way to you. Please arrange for me to examine your patient immediately upon my arrival, Van Helsing.
Ladies and gentlemen, I shall now explain that 6 months before the events recorded here, I had become engaged to a young lady, Lucy Westenra. We were to be married in the spring. My old teacher, Professor Van Helsing, arrived at 4 the next afternoon. I took him at once to Lucy's house. She lay in her bed asleep. She was ghastly, chalky pale. The red seemed to have gone even from her lips and gums. And the bones of her face stood out.
Young miss is bad, very bad. She must have blood or she will die. She is not anemic. The qualitative analysis in her blood is quite normal condition. It is strange. I do not like to think how strange. Look! My God, her throat! Look!
The black velvet band that she always wore dragged up a little and showed a red mark on her throat. Just over the external jugular vein were 2 punctures. Not large, but not wholesome looking. The edges were white and worn looking. Well, what is it, Professor? What's wrong with her? Speak frankly. You can tell me the worst.
I wish I could, Seward. I wish I could, but I do not dare.
But won't you tell me anything?
I will tell you this. Your young lady is in danger greater than death. You must believe me. If you leave her for one moment and harm befalls her, you will not sleep easy thereafter.
September 8th. I sat up all night with Lucy.
Arthur, I'm afraid.
Oh, my dear, you can sleep tonight. I'm here watching you. Nothing can happen. And I promise, at any sign of bad dreams, if I see anything, I'll wake you at once.
You will? Will you really? Then I'll sleep.
I sat all night by her bedside. She did not wake once during the night, although the boughs or a bat or something slapped almost angrily against the window pane. September 11th, still quoting from my private journals. This time I received a message from Perfleet. It read, 10:20 p.m., St. John's Hospital. Serious complications, case 891. Your immediate presence in London imperative. I had no choice. Sometime later, a paper was found among Lucy Westerner's belongings.
I write this and leave it to be seen so that no one may get into trouble from me. I went to bed as usual, taking care that the window was closed, as Dr. Van Helsing had directed. About 2 in the morning, I awakened. I went to the door, called out, "Arthur! Arthur!" There was no answer. Something's broken the window. I'm in the room alone. I dare not go out. The house seems to be empty. The air, full of specks floating, circling in the draft from the window. The light burns blue, dim. What am I to do? Something very sweet and bitter all around me. Like I'm sinking into deep water. There's singing in my ears.
You shall be flesh of my flesh, blood of my blood.
Ah.
September 12th, late. Only resolution and habit can let me make an entry tonight. We found her sprawled on the floor, and there was a draft in the room from the broken window. The throat was bare, showing the two wounds, looking horribly white and mangled.
We are too late, my friend. We have failed. God's will be done.
She is dying?
Yes. Yes, she is dying. Stay with her. It will make much difference, mark me, whether she dies conscious or in her sleep.
It was late in the afternoon before she opened her eyes.
Arthur! Oh, my love! I'm so glad you've come.
I took her hand and knelt beside her. Her breath came and went like a tired, peaceful child. And then the light from the setting sun fell on her face. And then, insensibly, a strange change came over her. Her eyes grew suddenly dull and hard. Her breathing was heavy. Her mouth opened, and the pale gums drawn back made the teeth look large and sharp.
Arthur! Ah, my love! I'm so glad you've come. Kiss me. Bend down and kiss me.
Run for your life. Run for your living soul. And here's...
Lucy!
She's dead.
Poor girl. Lie in peace at last. The end.
Then not so. It is only the beginning. Wait and see.
Extra special. Extra special. Kensington Horror.
Westminster Gazette, September 25th. A Hampstead mystery. The Kensington Horror and the woman in black are vividly recalled to mind by a series of events that have taken place recently in the neighborhood of Hampstead. Several cases have occurred of a young children straying from home or failing to return from playing on the heath. In all these cases, the children have given as their excuse that they have been with a beautiful lady who offered them chocolates. In each case, the child was found to be slightly torn or wounded in the throat. The wounds seem to be such as might be made by a rat.
Extra special.
Or a small dog.
Extra special, Hampstead Horror. Reading about the beautiful lady, read about the beautiful lady, extra special.
The Hampstead Horror. Another child is injured by... But, beautiful lady, we have just received intelligence that another child, missed last night, was only discovered late in the morning, has the same tiny wound in the throat. Well, Seward, what do you think of that? You mean to tell me, my friend, that you still have no suspicions as to what poor Lucy died of?
There was prostration following on great loss or waste of blood.
And how was the blood loss or wasted? You are a clever man, my friend, and a good doctor, but you do not believe that there are things you cannot understand. You are wrong, Seward. Are you aware of all the mysteries of life and death? Can you tell me why, in the pompous, There are bats that come at night and open the veins of cattle and horses and suck dry those veins. How on some islands of the western seas, there are bats which hang down from trees all day. And then when the sailors sleep on deck, because it is hot, sweep down on them, and then in the morning they are found as dead men, as white as Miss Lucy was.
I understand none of these things.
After tonight, Seward, if you dare to come with me, perhaps then you will understand.
September 29th, before dawn. Now it is done. And I would sooner die 1,000 deaths than to live again what I did this night.
We will spend the night, you and I, in this churchyard where Miss Lucy is buried. We enter the tomb.
And then?
We open the coffin. You shall yet be...
Take care, Van Helsing.
Miss Lucy is dead, is it not so? Then there can be no wrong to her. But if she is not dead...
With some difficulty, we found the western tomb. I took up my place behind a yew tree on the one side of the tomb, Van Helsing on the other. I was chilled and frightened. Suddenly, I saw something moving between two yew trees. A dim white figure which held something at its breast. The figure stopped. I could not see the face, for it was bent down over what I saw to be a fair-haired child. There was a sharp little cry, such as a child gives in sleep, or a dog as it lies before the fire and dreams. And then the thing saw us. She drew back with an angry snarl. Her lovely blood-stained mouth grew to an open square. If ever a face meant death, I saw it at that moment. And then suddenly she turned and vanished in the direction of the tomb.
The child is unharmed. We leave him in a safe place where the police find him. There's more to do now. Come.
Now we're in the tomb. There in the coffin, the thing lay like a nightmare of Lucy. The pointed teeth, the blood-stained mouth. Van Helsing never looked up. From his bag, he took out a book, his operating knife, a heavy hammer, and a round wooden stake, 2 or 3 inches thick, sharpened to a fine point and hardened over a fire.
Seward, the life of this unhappy woman has just begun. Then she becomes what you call undead. There comes with a change the curse of immortality. She cannot die, but must go on, age after age, adding new victims, because all that die from the preying of the undead become themselves undead and prey on others. So the circle goes on, ever widening as the ripples from a stone thrown into the water. But if this lady is undead, be made to rest as true dead, then the soul of the poor lady whom we shall love should be again free.
Tell me, what am I to do?
I take the stake in your left hand, the hammer in your right.
Yes?
And place the point over the heart.
Here?
Yes, yes. And then when I begin the prayer for the dead, in God's name, strike.
No.
Are you ready? Now, Domine Deus Priste.
On the morning of July 11th, a man was found on the border of Transylvania. He talked wildly of wolves and boxes of earth and blood. He gave his name as Jonathan Harker. In a hospital at Klausenberg, he improved sufficiently to make possible his removal to England. I'm still quoting from my own personal papers. But then his condition remained so serious that he was committed for observation to a private ward in my hospital at Purfleet. Here he did so well that in 3 weeks he was completely recovered. It was during this time that his wife, Mina Harker, brought to the attention of Dr. Van Helsing and myself the journal that her husband had kept while the prisoner in the castle of a certain Count Dracula in Transylvania. I have before me the record of a meeting that took place in my study in Purfleet, transcribed by Mina Harker.
October 1st. Meeting again, 10 after 8. Jonathan next to me. Dr. Seward afterwards, and Dr. Van Helsing at the head of the table.
My friends, there are such things as vampires. Had I at first known what I now know, one so precious a life would have been spared for the many of us who love her. The vampire which is among us is himself so strong that he can direct all the elements, the storm, the fog, the thunder. He can command all the meaner things, the moth and bat, the owl, the fox, and the wolf. How then are we to begin to destroy him? How shall we find his place? And having found it, how can we destroy, my friends? It is a terrible task that we undertake. And to fail here is not mere life or death. If we fail to become as him, foul things of the night, as him. What do you say?
I answer for myself.
Come near.
I'm with you.
The professor laid a small golden crucifix on the table. We took hands, and our solemn pact was made.
My friends, we too are not without strength. The vampire flourishes on the blood of the living. Without this, he cannot live. He throws no shadow. He makes no reflection in the mirror. He can transform himself into a wolf, to a bat. He can come on moonlight rays as elemental dust. He can see in the dark. He can do all these things, and yet he is not free. His power ceases at the coming of day, and then until night he must remain in the shape in which he finds himself. And then, except for his coffin home, those earth boxes, he cannot rest. When we can confine him in his coffin, then, my friends, if we obey what we know, we will destroy him.
At that moment, something slapped wildly against the window, and then...
Did you hear it?
I don't know.
We looked out of the window, against the black sky. You could see nothing.
Data are now positioned. From the Count's Castle in Transylvania to Whitby came 50 boxes of earth. All of these, to our certain knowledge, were delivered at Carfax. Recently, 12 of these boxes have been removed. First step, ascertain whether all the rest remain in the deserted house next door, or whether any more have been removed. We must break each of these boxes and sterilize the earth with holy water so he can no longer seek safety in it. And we must hurry.
The events of the next few days are described in Jonathan Harker's journal.
October 2nd, 5 a.m. Just returned from the empty house. Left Mina here at home. Well, we've done our work at Carfax. The place was filthy, the air stagnant and foul, and alive with rats. We counted the boxes, only 38 of them. And over each one, the professor went through his same mysterious work. It was dawn when we got back. I found Mina sleeping. She looks paler than usual.
October 2nd. Soon after they left, I fell asleep. I remember hearing the sudden barking of the dogs, and then it was silent. I got up and looked out the window. There was a thin streak of white mist moving across the grass along the wall of the house. It dawned on me that the air in the room was heavy and dank and cold. The gas lights came only like a tiny red spark in the fog. I could see through my eyelids. The mist grew thicker and thicker. Then as I looked, the spark divided and seemed to shine on me through the fog like two red eyes.
You shall be flesh of my flesh, blood of my blood,
October 2nd, 8 p.m. We are on the track. 12 boxes were delivered to an empty house at 337 Piccadilly.
My dear friends, until the sun sets tonight, Dracula must retain whatever form he has. We have this day to hunt out all his lairs and sterilize them. Then he will have no place he can move and hide. But we have only until sunset.
The house in Piccadilly was empty. Like the one at Purfleet, the same sickening smell is in the air. On the table we found a clothes brush, a brush and a comb, and a basin, the latter containing dirty water which was reddened as if with blood.
The boxes are back here. 8, 9, 10, 11?
Only 11?
Well, there's a 12th box somewhere.
Gentlemen, it's after 6. The sun is setting. We have no time to lose. He will return at any moment. Open the boxes.
Quiet.
Listen. Here it is. It is he.
The window!
You waste your bullets, gentlemen. You think to baffle me with your pale faces all in a row like sheep's in a butcher's. You think you have left me without a place to rest. But I have more, and time is on my side. The one you love is mine already. I have known her. Already my mark is on her throat. Flesh of my flesh. Blood of my blood. She is with me always, over land or sea.
October 4th, morning. Another meeting in the study at Purfleet.
We must find that last remaining box, gentlemen. We must find it. As long as that earth exists and pure, as long as that remains one place of refuge for Dracula, there is no safety and no peace for any soul in England.
And for the undead, never peace so long as he lives. Blood of my blood. Blood of my blood.
Mina!
How do you know that?
Quiet, quiet.
With me always, over land and sea.
Mina, darling, how do you know that Dracula said those words?
I don't know. The words just came to me. Strange. There are times when somehow I feel that I'm with him.
At sunset?
Yes, just as the sun sets, and again at sunrise. Dr. Van Helsing, if you could, if possibly at those times...
Have you the courage?
The courage for what? What do you mean?
Dr. Van Helsing here will question me.
I will question her, yes. In a state of hypnosis, the one you love is already mine. Said. She is always with me over land or sea, or Count Dracula. Perhaps she will betray you as she is really with you. This is the one we love. Who knows if she is really with you over land or sea?
Blood of my blood.
Mina!
Yes?
Answer me, Mina. Are you with him?
Yes, I am with him.
Where are you?
I don't know.
What do you hear?
Dark.
What do you hear?
The lapping of the water. I can hear it on the outside.
Then you are in a ship.
Yes.
What else do you hear?
There is creaking of an anchor chain.
What are you doing?
Still. Oh, so still. It is like death. It is like death.
Here's a report from the Matson Peabody, ship brokers, dated October 5th. According to Lloyd's lists, the only sailing ship that left for the Black Sea yesterday was the Tsarina Katrina, bound for Varna. Somehow, before she sailed, a man came alongside, all in black, driving a cart with a great box in it. This he lifted down single-handed and carried below. No one remembers having seen him after that. A heavy mist came up over Doolittle Dock until sailing time. The rest of London Harbor remained completely clear.
Our plans are made. The average sailing time from London to the Black Sea is 3 weeks. We can travel overland to the same place in 3 days. We shall be waiting for him when he arrives.
October 15th. Arrived Varna about 5:00. Mina feels stronger. Every morning before sunrise and just before sunset, she speaks to Van Helsing in a trance.
Are you with him? Mina, tell me, are you with him?
I am with him.
What can you see?
Nothing. All is dark.
What can you hear?
I hear the waves lapping against the ship and the water rushing by. The wind is high. I hear it in the shrouds and the sea foam.
So, the Tsarina Katrina is still at sea, hastily to Varna. The Count cannot cross running water, so he cannot leave the ship without being observed.
What do you hear, Mina?
Lapping waves, rushing water, darkness, darkness.
A whole week of waiting. Dated telegram from Lloyd.
Not yet reported.
Rushing water, creeping mist, darkness and wind.
October 24th, telegram. Lloyd's, London to Hawker. Tsarina Katrina reported this morning from Dardanelles.
Lloyd's, London to Harker, October 28th. Tsarina Katrina in heavy fog.
reported entering Galatz Harbor at 1 o'clock today.
Galatz is 38 hours from here, and the first train to Galatz leaves at 6:30 tomorrow morning. My friends, we have lost.
I am with you. I can see nothing, nothing. I hear men's voices calling in the roar and the prick of the wind. I can feel the air blowing.
October 29th, evening. We are due between 2 and 3 in the morning, but already at Bucharest we are 3 hours late.
What's going on? I feel something pass me like a cold wind. I can hear far off, confused sounds as of men talking in strange tongues, fierce falling waters, and the howling of the wolves. There is another sound. How queer a sound. It is like
what, Mina? Mina, speak. I command you. I command you to speak.
Arrived in Galatz, saw the captain of the Tsarina Katrina.
Welcome aboard. We are over an hour before sunup. We received a box for a party by the name of Dracula. Had his parties arrived, Emmanuel Hildesheim, his name was.
Mr. Hildesheim?
Yes?
You unloaded a box yesterday?
I got it from Kailov by order. Kailov.
Mr. Kailov?
Oh, no. This morning they find him dead inside the churchyard of St. Peter. They find him dead and with his throat torn open.
October 30th, evening.
There are 2 ways in which Dracula can get back to his own place. By land or by water?
Well, we've examined the map and found the most likely river is the Sereth.
You and I, Seward, will charter a stream, launch and follow him up the river. Van Helsing and Mina will take a train to Vercetti, and from there...
From there, we shall go over to the track to where Harker went to Bistritza, over to Borgo. If you have not caught him before then, we shall be meeting Dracula there.
October 31st. We arrived at Foresti at noon. Van Helsing and I brought the carriage here. We start in an hour. Our enemy is still on the river.
October 31st. We can in good speed up the river at night. There's plenty of water, and the banks are wide apart.
November 1st, evening. No news all day. We hear that a big boat went up the river before us, going at more than usual speed.
November 4th, all day driving. The country gets wilder as we go. By morning, we should reach the Borgo Pass.
And November the 4th, evening. We have left the launch. We've got horses and we follow on the track along the river. We are armed.
Look, quick! There they are now, heading west.
Through the dawn, we could see the Slovaks some miles before us, dashing along the river with their wagon. On it is a great box.
Late in the afternoon, we leave the Borgo Pass.
Van Helsing, look! Look!
We could see a long way off around, far off beyond the white waste of snow, curling like a black ribbon, curling between us and the river. Not far off came a group of mounted Slovaks riding along. And in the midst of them was a wagon that swept from side to side, and the wagon was a great box.
Look!
We see 2 horses following fast, coming up from the south, Seward and Harker. The Slovaks with their heavy wagons are losing their ground. Now they must be not more than a mile behind. Now the wagon is quite close. We can see the great box lying gravely. Now they are almost upon us. Now has happened a strange thing. The wagon smashed into a great rock buried in the snow, lost its front wheel and turned over on its side, jammed against the stone. The horses tore loose from their tracers and bolted, and the Slovaks scattered and vanished after them. Then silence. Silence like comes after ringing a bell.
Look, his face.
It is Dracula, sprawled out stiff and twisted in the smear of his own holy earth. The box, in falling, has emptied the dirt onto the snow. His face is old-looking. The skin is like paper. Dr. Seward, there's no time. Look at the sun.
Sunset.
In 1 minute, it is sunset, and he is forever lost to us. Have you the stake of wood and the hammer?
Yes.
Now, Seward, pray for us. Kneel down and pray. Harker, the stake of wood over his heart. Be not afraid, Harker. Do not look into his eyes, the hammer. Now, Harker, strike! Strike!
Flesh. Flesh of my flesh. Guilt of my guilt. Death of my death. Speak and be manifest in the instant of your master's peril. Elements of darkness, rain. Evil wind, mist and mold and tempest.
Strike! Strike!
The others couldn't, but somehow I could hear him speaking behind his eyes.
Claw, wing, tooth, scale, tissue of flesh, death of my death, dead and undead. The hand of the living is over your master. Console me, my children. This instant is no longer than the space between two heartbeats. But the night is near, and I am lonely. Come to your master, my children. Beguile him now in the instant of his peril. Beguile him with the sound of your names. Claw, wing, tooth, scale, tissue of flesh. Claw, wing, tooth, scale, tissue of flesh.
Strike, Harker, strike!
There is one very dear to me who has not answered. My love, Mina, there is less than a minute between me and the night. You must speak for me. You must speak with my heart.
Give them to me, Jonathan, give them to me. Give me the stick of wood and the hammer.
Harker!
I shall never forget that moment. The look on poor Mina's face as she stood there. The angry scar standing out on her throat. Her eyes like living coals in the last red of sunset. She had torn the stake and the hammer out of my hands with the strength of an animal.
Mina, do you know what you have done, woman? Do you know what you have done to us? You have released him. The evil is free.
Look! The sun!
As we looked down at Dracula, we saw the sinking sun and the hate in them turn to triumph.
Flesh of my flesh, come to me, my love. Come to me in the night and the darkness. You have served me well. My love, my bride, my...
Ladies and gentlemen, all the evidence is now before you. I've added nothing, and to the best of my knowledge, I have omitted nothing that might help to throw light upon the extraordinary events of the year 1891, which culminated on that terrible evening in the Borgo Pass. There remains only this one last report.
Then Mina Harker seized the stake and hammer from her husband. I believe she was under some form of hypnosis. She herself remembers nothing, but whatever influence was at work on her, she must at the last moment have rejected it. For at the exact instant the sun disappeared, it was Mina Harker who drove the stake through the heart of the thing that called itself Dracula. At that same instant, even as we looked, the wound at the side of her throat was no more. As for Dracula, before the screams of the creature had died from our ears, the whole body crumbled into dust and passed from our sight. In the final moment of the solution, there was in the face a look of peace, such as I could never have imagined might have rested there. Today's production of Dracula by Orson Welles was originally produced on the Mercury Theater, and it was the first of 9 CBS broadcasts in which this brilliant group brought to life a series of great stories. Our own brilliant group of actors from the 91.1 Players today were, in the role of Count Dracula, Cameron Spencer. Terry Lawler portrayed Seward. As Harker, the old man and Dracula's driver, Tom Powers. Kathy Zolke played the roles of Lucy and the driver. The role of Mina was voiced by Victoria Dumay. Victoria Ide was the news vendor. And I am your announcer and host for today's broadcast of Dracula, Don Jensen. And, oh yes, I was also the voice of Van Helsing.
Your gateway to public radio is WGTD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.